So we'll just touch a few points from the last sections so that we can keep them fresh in our minds. Texts 78 to 80 list the 26 qualities of the devotee. We did not discuss the verses in detail, but we should know what the 26 qualities are, and we should try to develop them. Out of the 26 qualities, one is most essential. That is Krishnaika Sharana. Exclusively surrendered to Krishna. If one has the quality Krishnaika Sharana, then gradually all of the other good qualities will develop. But if he doesn't have the one quality of surrender to Krishna, then all of the other qualities have no special value. Still, as part of sadhana bhakti, we should try to develop the good qualities of the Vaishnava. Although by developing Krishna consciousness, one automatically develops the good qualities. But part of the process of developing Krishna consciousness is to try to develop the qualities also. And especially as preachers, we represent Srila Prabhupada. And we should always be conscious of the fact that the qualities that people see in us will attract them or repel them to Krishna consciousness. And they will develop an opinion of Krishna consciousness, of Srila Prabhupada, according to their experience with us. So we should try to develop the good qualities at the same time that we practice the various items of devotional service. In the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains the process of knowledge, beginning with amanitvam adambitvam, which means humility and pridelessness. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that one should test how he is advancing in Krishna consciousness. And the test will be how he is developing the various items mentioned there. So we should try to develop such qualifications, which are part of the process of knowledge. 13th chapter, text 8 to 12. By associating with pure devotees, and especially by serving pure devotees, one develops saintly qualities. And by associating with or serving materialistic persons, one loses good qualities. As explained in text 88 to 90, by association with worldly people, one becomes devoid of truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, gravity, spiritual intelligence, and so on. Text 92 says, One should not even see those who are bereft of devotional service in Krishna consciousness, and who are therefore devoid of pious activities. One time in Calcutta, Srila Prabhupada saw one devotee with Time magazine, and he said that the people whose photos appear in Time magazine are so sinful that we should not even see their faces. So just by seeing their faces, their pictures, we lose all pious credits. Of course, when we preach, we take risks. But we should know that every association has its implications. And we should calculate the risk that we're taking and then take it. We should not enter blindly into some situation. Of course, if we approach the person to preach only for the purpose of preaching, then we can expect the protection and mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. Now we come to the discussion of surrender. Surrender is the beginning of bhakti. Bhakti begins with surrender. Surrender means surrender to Krishna. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna asks us to surrender to Him. As stated in text 94, quoted from Bhagavad Gita, 1866. Sarva dharman prityajya mam ekam saranam vraja aham tum sarva papebhyo mukshi yishyami mam shuchah. Famous verse of Bhagavad Gita, which all of us should know. But what is actually involved in the process of surrender is explained in text 100. Anukulyasya sankalpa. We should accept whatever is favorable for the service of the Lord. Pratikulyasya varjanam. And we should reject whatever is not favorable. Rakshishyati ti vishvasya. One should have strong conviction that Krishna will protect us. That if we surrender to Krishna, Krishna will protect us, as He promises in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, Kaunteya pratijani hi name bhakta pranashiti. Declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. So why does Krishna tell Arjuna to declare it? Why doesn't Krishna declare it himself?
Sometimes
Krishna don't really speak when his devotee speaks. If his devotee always speaks the truth, because Krishna will never make his devotee speak the lie. Yes. One of the supermost qualities in Krishna is bhakta vatsala. He's affectionate to his devotees. So he considered the words of his devotees to be more important than his words. Just like when Bhishma took a vow that in the battle at Kurukshetra, that either he will kill Arjuna or he will make Krishna break his promise not to take up weapons. So Krishna wanted to uphold the vow of Bhishma. He considered the vow of Bhishma more important than his own vow. So breaking his own vow, he took up a broken chariot wheel and rushed towards Grandfather Bhishma in the midst of the fighting. So Krishna does not consider his own promise to be most important, but he considers his devotee's promise to be most important. And he will never let the words of his devotee fail. And people know it. So if the devotee promises, then Krishna will surely uphold the devotee's promise. Therefore, if Arjuna declares, Kaunteya pratijani hiname bhakta pranashyati, that Krishna's devotees will never perish, then we know for sure that Krishna's devotees will never perish, because we have heard it from the devotee. So if we have faith in the words of the devotee, if we have faith in Srila Prabhupada, that if we chant 16 rounds, follow the four principles, do our best to spread the Sankirtan movement, we will go back to Godhead. So we should have confidence in the protection of Krishna. The protection of Krishna specifically means the protection of the devotee in spiritual life. Not necessarily material protection, although it may often involve material protection, but it mainly means that the devotee will be protected from fall down as long as he remains surrendered to Krishna. And once he's surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna will take care of him in every respect. But the devotee does not place any demands on Krishna, but he knows that Krishna will do whatever is best for him. Krishna knows better than we do what is best for us. Gopshitve varanam tata. Gopshitve means that he accepts Krishna as his guardian, like his father or husband or master or maintainer. In other words, he's everything for the devotee. And naturally, the guardian will give protection to the warden.
How does that differ from the last?
It includes protection, but it includes more than protection. A guardian will give protection, but he does more than give protection. He gives affection. But they're related.
Doesn't he also maintains the devotee?
Yes. Here we remember the story of the Brahmin named Arjun. You might not know the name of the Brahmin, but you know the Brahmin. He was very poor. He was quite poor. And he was reading Bhagavad Gita, and he came to the verse, Yoga Kshema Bhajamyaham, where Krishna says he preserves what his devotee has and carries what his devotee lacks. So he thought that every day I'm going and begging alms. Krishna doesn't himself give me alms, but various people who may be Krishna's instruments, they give grains and ghee and other ingredients. So he was writing some notes on Bhagavad Gita. So he took his red ink and he cut the word where Krishna says that he personally carries to the devotee whatever the devotee needs. Then he went out to beg alms. Generally he would go in the morning and come back about 12 o'clock and give the foodstuffs to his wife, and his wife would cook. But this morning, he didn't come back. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, he didn't come back. Then one young boy came, carrying, I think this, a rod that had, you know, in India and in other Oriental countries, they carry. It's like a
yoke.
Baskets.
What's it called?
With the baskets on.
Yeah, baskets, fully laden with rice, dal, all sorts of grains, ghee, sugar, vegetables. So many things. And it was so heavy he could hardly carry it. So he came to the house and he was very fatigued from the labor of carrying the load and he was perspiring. So the Brahmin's wife said, come, what have you brought? So he said that I brought all ingredients for you to cook. So she said, please come, sit down. You're so beautiful and soft and also so fatigued and perspiring and everything. Come and sit and take rest and I will cook something for you. And he said, no, I cannot stay here. Otherwise I will get here late and your husband is very cruel. Once I was a little late and he became so furious that he scratched my back to the point that blood came up. Then he turned his back and she saw. She said, oh, my husband has done that. He's so cruel. I said, yes, he's very dangerous. I cannot stay here. So she said, no, you must stay. When he comes, I will chastise him why he has done so. You sit here. I'm just now making prasad. So she went, and a few minutes later, her husband came. And she said, he said that I've been out the whole day. I couldn't get one grain. I don't know what to do. We will starve today. So she said, no, you sent one boy. He already came. He brought so many things. Rice, dal, atta, ghee. No, I never sent anybody. Yes, he's in the next room, and you were so cruel that because he was a little late, you scratched him. I never did anything like that. Okay, let's go and see the boy. So they went into the next room, but the boy was gone. Then the husband began to think, and he thought that, let me see my Bhagavad Gita. So he looked into his Bhagavad Gita, and he saw that the red ink where he had cut the words that Krishna personally brings had disappeared. Then he understood everything, that the boy was Krishna, that he had personally brought all the foodstuffs that the Brahmin needed, and that that by scratching the words from Bhagavad Gita, which is not different from the Lord, he'd actually scratch the back of the Lord. Then he felt very sorry. And he also, anyway, so this is faith in the protection of the Lord, or acceptance of the Lord as one's maintainer. That the Lord will not fail in any circumstance. And the devotees never starve. They cannot starve. They cannot possibly starve. They might overeat, but they don't. And devotees who have gone out to new places to preach or on Padyatra, I also experienced. When we began Padyatra in Mauritius, we had no idea where the food will come from. The devotees would go out door to door, and people would give little this or that. And we thought, maybe there will be enough for us. So by chance, the first day, means we started in the afternoon after Prasad, and we came to the next village by the late afternoon. And the next day was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day. So one of the devotees on the party, named Kalidas, who's in Mayapur now, he announced after the evening program that tomorrow is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day, and there's going to be a big feast, so you should all come. And I thought, oh no, how could he say that? We don't even know if there's going to be enough for us to eat. And what if they come? We won't have any prasad. So the next morning we sent everyone out, and they were coming back one by one, a little rice, a little dal, but not too much. But it was adding up. It was adding up. My anxiety was decreasing a little. And then they started to cook. We also didn't know how many people would come. And the people started to come. And it looked like we might have enough. But then more and more people came. And I was sure, not only we wouldn't have enough, but it wouldn't be a feast, because it was just simple ingredients. Then suddenly, just before the time of offering, the devotees came from the farm with a big feast. Somehow they were inspired that we're out on Padyatra, so they brought a big feast for everyone. But then after that, gradually we started to see that actually Krishna always does provide, even if the devotees didn't bring prasad from the temple. But it may be simple. It may be simple, but enough to keep the body and soul together. Then, Atma Nipekshepa, full self-surrender. Full self, well, first of all, Atma, self, may mean the soul, it may mean the mind, or it may mean the body. So full self-surrender means surrendering the soul, the mind, and the body to the will of Krishna. In other words, the devotee is convinced that if he tries to do anything independent of the will of Krishna, he will not be able to succeed. So he does not want to have separate desires from the will of Krishna. But he wants to act only according to the will of Krishna, with body, mind, and words. And this is the beginning of It's like the door to bhakti. Surrender is the door to bhakti. It's just the threshold. And then one begins. And karmanye, humility. Devotee should always be meek and humble. Because he knows that God is great and he is very small. This is sambandhagyan. So if we have sambandhagyan, we have to be humble. We have to be aware of the greatness of God and our own insignificance. If we become proud, and we are prone to be proud, it means that either we're forgetting our own position or Krishna's position.
Would Krishna have not fulfilled Bhishma's vow because it was sort of like a non-devotee, because it was a leela, or it was sort of like an improper type of vow for him to take, that he was going to kill Arjuna, because he preferred Arjuna?
You mean, why did Bhishma make such a promise?
No, why did Krishna not fulfill his vow? He's a great pure. So I'm wondering, did Krishna didn't fulfill his vow, his promise?
Yeah.
So I was just wondering is that just a matter of leela, or that it was sort of like a non-devotee type of vow?
No, you see, Krishna's supreme quality is bhakti-vatsala. So he has vowed to protect his devotees, like Arjuna. So if someone attacks his devotee, as Bhishma attacked Arjuna, then Krishna considers his vow to protect his devotee more important than his vow not to take part in the fighting. And simultaneously, he protected the vow of the other devotee, Bhishma.
But Bhishma's vow was to kill Arjuna.
Yeah.
Was it?
No.
Not only that.
Or else...
Krishna would have to take the
prisoner. Yeah. I said it in the beginning. But he said that either he will kill Arjuna or he'll make Krishna break his promise. So in order to protect Arjuna and Bhishma's promise, he broke his promise. How are you to understand it?
Yeah, in relationship to that other statement, how that Krishna, like Kamsya Pranjani, you declare Arjuna that, and my, my voice is never carries. So even if Yudhisthira, who never told a lie, in his whole life, and Krishna told him to speak a lie. So, but yeah, I'm just trying to understand that.
Krishna is independent. Krishna does not come under any rule or regulation. Just like once Srila Prabhupada asked us that we follow certain principles, like no gambling. But we see that Balaram was gambling, playing chess, and so many things. We follow no intoxication, but Balaram took intoxication, and so on. We say no illicit sex, but Krishna danced with the wives of other men. So, what about that? What's the answer? How do we answer people who raise such questions? Well, Srila Prabhupada gave the answer that Krishna is absolute. Whatever he does is all good. Just like if we steal, it's very bad. It causes misery. But when Krishna steals, it causes pleasure. We know about that. And then the other thing is that Krishna is independent. He makes the laws, but he's above the laws. So if generally Krishna wants the vow of his devotee to be maintained. But this is not exactly a vow. I mean, like, he's independent. He does not come under any law, even his own law. He's in the heart. He can give the devotee the intelligence to know. But ultimately we have to have faith. If we don't have faith, then we can't begin the process of devotion. And if we see contradictions, and on account of the contradictions, we can't develop faith, then that is our misfortune. Because bhakti is actually beyond logic and reason. Bhakti is independent. So with logic and reason, we can come to some point. But ultimately, without the mercy of the Lord, or the mercy of the devotee, we won't have faith. And without faith, we can't progress. And if we are unfortunate, we'll become bewildered by the contradictions and we won't be able to progress. And if we're fortunate and get the mercy of the devotees and the Lord, then we'll develop faith and the contradictions or apparent contradictions won't disturb us. Okay, I don't want to get too sidetracked.
Of course, he didn't even speak of life because he said, as the power of the elephant at this day, and Krishna just said the arrangement of the crucial bowl. So actually, in that way, really said that he was not even lying. But it appeared that he was lying. But then the crucial bowl.
Yeah. Okay. Now, next verse. Oh yeah, just to relate the six divisions of surrender to the previous discussions. Lord Chaitanya was instructing Sanatana Goswami that he should associate with devotees and avoid the association of non-devotees. So here's an example that we should accept what's favorable. The association of devotees. And we should reject what is not favorable, the association of non-devotees. Those are the first items of surrender. Now, we have come to the point of surrender. And after surrendering, what do we
do?
Yes. We engage in devotional service. So now we're actually ready to engage in devotional service. But it doesn't mean that now that I'm engaged in devotional service, I don't have to be surrendered. The surrender always has to remain. And the devotional service is built on the surrender. Now here we come to a very important definition, which you'll need to know for the next exam, which we always need to know for our spiritual advancement. It is the definition of sadhana bhakti. And it contains two important elements. The first element is that The service is performed with body, mind, and words. Or in other words, practical devotional service. You see, we're on text 105. Kritisadhya, which is to be executed by the senses. Kritisadhya bhavet sadhya bhava, by which love of Godhead is acquired. Sa sadhanadibhi, that is called sadhana bhakti, or devotional service and practice. In other words, we use the senses to engage in the service of the Lord. And by such service, dormant love of Godhead is awakened. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example that a child has the innate capacity to walk. But as a baby, he cannot walk. But by practice, he learns to walk. And once he knows to walk, how to walk, he can walk very easily, without any effort, without any thought. He can just walk naturally. So if the basic capacity for walking were not there, then the child couldn't learn to walk just by practicing. But because the basic capacity is there, then by practice, the basic capacity becomes invoked. And the child can walk, then he can run, he can dance, he can jump, he can play without even thinking about it. So, dormant love for Krishna is already there, but it has to be awakened. And the process for awakening it is sadhana bhakti. Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhava sa sadhana vida.
I know you shouldn't put that verse on the list of important verses.
Because it's summarized two verses later in another verse, which will be easier to memorize. But we should know the definition. Even if we don't know the Sanskrit, we should know the definition.
But not for tomorrow. It's not imperative for
tomorrow. No. We're starting the second half of the course, the second night. Text 106. The spiritual activities of hearing, chanting, remembering, and so forth are the natural characteristics of devotional service. The marginal characteristic is that it awakens pure love for Krishna. Then here's the famous verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunaya Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karaye Udaya. Pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the hearts of living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, the living entity naturally awakens. So, Krishna prema is dormant in the heart. And by sadhana bhakti, and especially the processes of chanting and hearing, the dormant love is awakened. Now, sometimes devotees question that if Krishna bhakti or Krishna prema is already in the heart, then what is the bhakti lata beach? What is it that the devotee gets from the Vaishnava? So, if we go back to the story that Lord Chaitanya told about the astrologer and the poor man, we find that the poor man had the treasure. Here the treasure is what? Huh? It's hidden, but what is it?
Krishna prema.
Krishna prema. Not Krishna, Krishna prema. And so Krishna prema is there. But he didn't know he had it. So the astrologer gave him some instruction to establish the fact that he had the treasure, he had some relationship with the treasure. And he also told him the process by which he could get the treasure. But we meet people, we tell them about the relationship between the individual soul and the supreme soul. And we can even tell them about the process of devotional service, but they don't take it. They don't take it. Why don't they take it? Because they don't have faith. We tell them, but because they don't have faith, they don't accept it. So in order to get to bhakti, they have to have faith, shraddha. Shraddha is itself a feature of bhakti. So what one gets by the mercy of the Vaishnava is shraddha. The shraddha necessary to follow the instructions that will enable one to uncover the treasure. It's sort of like of course I don't know much about cars, but I've seen sometimes when someone has trouble starting the car, they'll put a little petrol in the carburetor even though there's so much petrol in the car, but he needs to put a little in the carburetor to get it started. So in the same way, without some special mercy from the Vaishnav that awakens Shraddha or gives Shraddha, he can't start the process that will ultimately uncover the prema that's already there. It's like, or in certain types of chemical reactions, a catalyst is required to start the reaction. So here the mercy of the Vaishnava is like the catalyst that starts the process going, although prema is there already, but covered.
What quality of Vaishnava can do that?
We discussed this for so long in the last.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
You give us your idea?
You said even a neophyte who has firm faith in the fact that beholding the Lord is identical with the Lord, that the person can instill that faith.
Yes, even a neophyte, as a man who has firm faith that the holy name of the Lord is identical to the Lord himself, is considered a pure devotee. And by his association, one can awaken devotional service. Correct. But generally, if you saw such a person, could you recognize him? Or could you distinguish him from another person who didn't have first faith? Pardon?
I might not.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we should go on. But every devotee who's preaching and distributing books and meeting people, who's sincere, he can create interest in Krishna consciousness in persons who are open to Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. whose message we are carrying and whose service we are attempting. Now, next point, very important. Text 108. There are two processes of practical devotional service. One is regulative devotional service and the other is spontaneous devotional service. Text 109. We should know the substance of text 109. Those who have not attained the platform of spontaneous attachment and devotional service render devotional service under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master according to the regulative principles mentioned in the revealed scriptures. According to the revealed scriptures, this kind of devotional service is called Vaidhi Bhakti. So within sadhana bhakti, there are two divisions, Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti. So later on, we'll come to the discussion of Raghunuga Bhakti, and there we'll get the definition of Raghunuga Bhakti. But for now, we should know the definition of Vaidhi Bhakti. And that is when there is not much spontaneous taste or spontaneous attraction. And one follows the rules and regulations simply in obedience to the order of the spiritual master and scriptures. This is not to say that someone who's practicing Raghunuga Bhakti doesn't follow the orders of the spiritual master or the injunctions of the scriptures. But it means that, anyway, we'll discuss what it means when we get to it.
The definition of Vaidhi Bhakti is a text in the first
109. Then 110 gives a very good example of a scriptural statement that inspires Vaidhi Bhakti or encourages Vaidhi Bhakti. Text 110. O descendant of Bharata, O Maharaj Parikshit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as Paramatma, who is the Supreme Controller and who always removes the miseries of living entities, must always be heard about from reliable sources, and he must be glorified and remembered by one who wishes to become fearless. So here, everyone in the material world is full of fear. And nobody likes to be full of fear. Everyone wants to become free from fear. So someone will read this verse from the scripture or hear this verse, and he will think, I want to become free from fear, especially even fear of death. How to achieve it? Oh, I should chant and hear and remember about Krishna, and I can become free from fear. So by knowledge, by argument from the scripture, he concludes that he should chant and hear and remember Krishna. And the verses selected by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same verse also by Srila Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, because it gives special stress on the first three of the nine items of devotional service, chanting and hearing and remembering. And the Lord, who is known as the Paramatma, removes the miseries of the living entities. So nobody wants to be miserable. We're miserable, but we don't want to be miserable. So we should chant and hear and remember Krishna, and then we can become free from misery.
Which verse is that?
This is quoted here, 110, and it's from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.5. One of the first instructions is to be able to respond to Maharaj Parikshit.
definitely Acharyas use this verse to exemplify Vaini Bhakti.
Yeah. In other words, I may not be spontaneously attracted to chanting and hearing about Krishna, but I hear from the scriptures and from the devotees that if I chant and hear about Krishna, I can become free from misery and free from fear and death. So I want to be free from misery, so I should do it. Even if I don't like it. Even if I would rather sleep during Bhagavatam class or gossip. But I should do it, because that's the only way that I'll actually become free from the miseries of material existence.
Did they ever use that other one, Etam Nirvidyamana, which is kind of a problem?
That is used by Rupa Goswami and Bhaktira Samrita Sindhu to illustrate the efficacy of chanting the holy name of the Lord. In other words, this verse is used in general for Vaini Bhakti, and it mentions chanting, hearing, and remembering. But in Bhaktira Samrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami gives evidence for each of the 64 items. And some of the more important items, like the five most important items, he may give several quotes. So this verse that you just quoted is used to support the glorification of the holy name.
Suppose I go on hearing, but I don't understand the full thing. Suppose it is reading Sanskrit, and it's not properly explained, or explained that I fail to catch. What happens then? I go on hearing, don't stop hearing. But what happens when I don't understand properly?
Even if you don't understand, you get benefit, because the transcendental sound vibration enters the heart and can purify the heart. But if, just like the editors of Back to God had asked Srila Prabhupada about articles by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And he said, yes, they should publish them. And then he said, but the people won't be able to understand them. He said, it doesn't matter if they don't understand them. They'll be purified just by the vibration. That's if we can't understand the language. But if we can't understand the concepts, we should inquire. We should inquire. You see, one of the main qualifications of the disciple is inquisitiveness, or eagerness to learn. So if he's eager to learn, he should inquire. Otherwise, if he thinks, what difference does it make if I understand or I don't understand? I'm eating and sleeping. Who cares? That's not the right attitude to the disciple. He should want to know. He should want to know. And if he doesn't, he should inquire. Now the next two verses we already read about how if one follows the rules and regulations of Varna and Ashram but does not serve the Lord, he falls down. Here Lord Chaitanya quotes the verse and Rupa Goswami also to establish another point, which is that bhakti is for everyone. So somebody may give the argument that you are sannyasis, you can do bhakti, I'm a grihastha. But here, the Bhagavatam says, no, you may be a grihastha, but if you don't do bhakti, you'll fall down. So here the purport is that unless one engages in devotional service, he'll fall down. So the conclusion is that everyone should engage in devotional service, whether he's Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi. It's for everyone. So here, the same verses that we use to establish the supremacy of bhakti over other processes, here the same verses are used to emphasize the universality of bhakti.